Ladies and gentlemen, it's the fifth annual 2018 Killy Awards.
Huzzah!
I think it's our third annual. Woo!
Bryce Castillo.
Hi,
as Bryce Castillo.
Hi, that's me.
With your hosts, Brian Brushwood.
Ahoy!
And me, Tom Merritt.
As you know, I should react to my own name.
Yeah. This is our annual look at our favorite things of the year. The Killies obviously means not that we're killing them, but that we think they're killing it because they are stuff we watched this year. They didn't have to be new this year, but stuff we watched for the first time this year and loved.
And specifically, we're not saying they're the best things on the planet. We're saying we love them a lot, and they are deserving of your attention.
Our personal recommendations.
Yeah, that's right. Each of us were tasked with coming up with 10 things, whether it's a TV show or a movie show or what have you.
I love those movie shows.
The movie shows. But then, of course, we have one abandonee, which traditionally is something that we had been following but had decided to give up or abandon.
That's right. Brian, why don't you start with your first Killy Award?
My first Killy Award goes... in tradition, as always, I'm going to cheat and do two seasons one and two of American Vandal.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Better than you would expect by a million miles. American Vandal is a wonderful fractal in that you can watch the first 10 minutes of season one and believe I get the joke. This is very funny. Right. And then at some point, it's still funny, but it's also interesting. At some point, you're invested and you're like, oh, wow, these people know exactly how to tell an amazing crime story that happens to be set with a ridiculous set of circumstances. And then season one ends. And you think, well, how are they going to top that? And then the way they do is with season two, they start with something that straight up becomes a legit ass crime mystery. It's fantastic beyond words, like real stakes. And you find yourself really invested. Mm-hmm. It's way, way good, way, way savvy, way, way of the moment. Right. Cannot recommend it enough.
And it is a show that was unfortunately canceled this year, but those two seasons stand alone and give you, there's no lingering thread.
Maybe that's actually a benefit where there are people who are afraid of getting into a thing. It's like, there's just two chapters.
There's
book one and book two, and you'll be done.
Even if you didn't watch the first season for some reason, like you could just pick one or the other to get into if you want something really short.
Yeah, in fact, my 14-year-old is right at that cusp where she might be, you know, into it. I'll see if she goes further.
I think she would like the kind of potty humor.
Yeah, well, actually, she always groans at potty humor. I think she might like season two in spite of the potty humor.
Season two is very graphic with those reenactments.
Well, yeah, but, yeah, all right. Yeah. Yeah, fair
there
enough.
Are parts where I was watching and eating, and I was like, I should.
Yeah. Well, it's different for me because I'll be watching it with a person whose butt I used to wipe. so maybe I'll be immune.
Awesome. Hey, Tom, what's your first Killy?
I am going to award my first Killy to the series Broadchurch, which people had recommended to me for a long, 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 long time. The reason I finally got around to it is because Jodie Whittaker was cast as the Doctor in Doctor Who, and I wanted to see her play something else. And her character in Broadchurch is very different than the Doctor. It is the mother of a murdered child, so quite a bit different than Doctor Who. Despite the fact that it really has nothing to do with Doctor Who, I fell in love with it. I thought it was fantastic. I agree with most people that season two is not as strong as season one. In fact, season three is probably even stronger than season two because season two seems to stretch what was good about season one a little bit. But overall, I mean, I just ate up this show. There are very few shows anymore where I really have to keep watching. I generally spread them out just for reasons of time. But Broadchurch was one where I made myself find time. And I was like, I'm watching this. And I got it done fairly quickly because of that. The execution of the mystery is good. The characters are well done and well played. And I really loved it.
Can you remind me of the overall conceit of Broadchurch? Because I just realized halfway through what you were saying that I was thinking of Torchwood, which I assume is very different.
Very different from Torchwood. Broadchurch has no aliens, no time travel. And it starts with the discovery of the murder of a child in a small town in England. And everyone's a suspect. And no one can understand who would have possibly wanted to murder this child or why.
Huh. So it's like a mystery show, basically.
It's a mystery, yeah.
It's like a rollicking comedy for the whole family.
Yeah, fun for the whole family. Well, Bryce, what about your next Killy?
I think my first Killy has got to go to the Netflix original adaptation of Devilman, Devilman Crybaby. I watched this and felt like this was a very special show.
Anime, right?
It's an anime. It is from Japan. And it is about a young man who gets possessed by a devil / the devil and uses his devil powers for good, basically. And this is not much of a spoiler, but it becomes like a good versus evil motif in this series, but the devil side is good. There is a montage of like social media where everyone's like, I am Devil Man, because it's the way that stuff works out.
The good things that the devil possessed individual does, are they motivated by the devil side, or is it a case where it's like it's, you know, the man side trying to guide it to good?
There, you know, I mean, that's what it plays with, right? Like there, it parallels a very coming of age story, right? This is a teenage boy who, as he is also becoming part possessed by the devil, is also going through puberty, and
it's hard for anyone to tell the difference.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's part of the conceit, right?
Yeah,
that
of course,
makes perfect sense.
But it's. It plays with that sort of stuff. It has a really fantastic, like, techno / like a Italo house sort of sound, and it has a very distinctive, like, gross, like, misshapen look. Like, so much of that show looks like it's like off model drawings, right? Just like kind of loose,
distorted
filler drawings, right? But it all plays well into kind of the themes of. Coming of age, your body's changing, as well as like maturing into adulthood.
I would assume also your perception of reality itself changes quite literally in puberty.
Yeah. So it's really fantastic, and it has an English dub and a Japanese dub with subtitles. Also, a fun fact: if you listen to the English dub, which is fine, there's a character who raps, and his raps are in Japanese on the English dub. So you kind of still get the they don't have to go through this clunky thing of translating it and redoing it. They just subtitle it as it is.
I am so glad that this was your first pick, because my second, it ties in perfectly with my second pick.
Oh, great.
Paddington 1 and 2. They're great.
The rap that doesn't happen in Paddington is also not dubbed.
Technically, my pick was Paddington 2, but there's no way I can recommend the second without saying the first. They're not necessarily tied together. You can watch them in any order. But my goodness, pure joy put onto celluloid. It's picture perfect. It's a note perfect movie. It's not going to surprise you if you're familiar with film conceits, but it will delight you from beginning to end. I watched it in the movie theater with my whole family. We were out on a cruise in Hawaii. We ignored Hawaii to watch Paddington 2 again on the cruise ship because it was just that enchanting. It's just delightful.
Yeah. In fact, probably the only reason I didn't put it on my list is I knew you would put it on your list.
Well,
really good movie.
Just a couple of weeks ago, Andrew Main from Weird Things, weirdthings.com.
Oh, Faye, finally got around to watching
it. Got to watching it. And like, it seems like it's not just a children's movie. It is like a movie for everyone, it seems.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Absolutely. My pick is in a similar vein. Sorry to Bother You.
Wait. Is that really your pick?
That is my next pick, and I know it's yours too, right?
Yeah. No. Right. I'm on board for that. As a matter of fact, it just dropped on Hulu, so now is your chance. If you have not seen it, do yourself a favor. Stop listening to us, because we'll be a little bit spoilery here, by which we mean all the way spoilery. You're spoilery enough. Like, okay. If you have the chance to go
put
in...
Put it this way, folks. With this movie, if you say anything about it, it's spoilery.
Correct.
Like, right. Yeah.
If you have the chance to see it not knowing a goddamn thing, now's your chance. Please go watch it right now.
And if you're listening to this after the fact, justwatch.com is a really good tool for some of the stuff that's not originals that helps you find where you can stream and download and buy all this stuff. So if it's not on Hulu anymore, justwatch.com is a good tool.
Can we all just deconstruct our experiences of seeing this movie?
Ooh. Sure. My experience was that at South by Southwest in March, Eileen went to see it because they were screening it there early. Came back and said, I'm not sure what I just saw, but I can't tell you anything about it because you just need to see it. It started off funny, and then I can't say anything else about it. And I was like, okay, this is a movie I have to see. And the things she would tell me are like, oh, it's set in Oakland. And Eileen and I used to live in Oakland for several years and have lots of friends who live there. And so we're like, oh, that's really cool. Like the 510 finally gets some love. And my experience of actually seeing it in the theater were those first few moments of, hey, it's Oakland. Hey, this is cool. Oh, interesting story. I love the humor. And then when it takes its turn, realizing, oh, this is the point she was talking about, and I'm fully on board. Mm-hmm. This is crazy. It's weird, and I loved it.
I think we talked about this on the show, but I watched it three times over the last year, one in the theater that it made me it was deeply unpleasant. It forced me to a place of deep introspection that I did not enjoy, and I tweeted the director and thanked him for that artistic experience. Then watching it again, I had a lot of fun knowing what all the turns were at every corner. Then I had the weird experience of knowing how adverse my wife is to the ugly parts of the show.
That's right.
And just being able to show like the first 40 minutes plus where it's charming and it's a quirky world. And what's funny is the moment that I decided it was now sufficiently too dark were way before the big twists. Like just when it was ugly, it was about selling out. It was about, you know, just the ugliness of providing for your family in a horrible economy and all that stuff. Like I found myself scooting forward on that. And then weirdly, after the twist, when it was clearly a cartoon, it was kind of great.
It's nice because it's both like realistic in a lot of aspects, but also exaggerated in many respects. And I think that speaks to kind of the spectrum of topics that it talks about, from personal and interpersonal relationships to broader societal trends and attitudes. But it's also like got wacky, weird, uncomfortable moments. I mean, the rap song.
The rap song was...
I was in the theater and it's already uncomfortable, but it's uncomfortable, and it's doubled by the fact that the rest of the movie was hilarious and you've been laughing and
all
and
of a sudden you felt like
I cannot be
you
the
felt
laughing
robbed of certain emotional moves. Sure. Where it's like I cannot be a part of what I'm looking at right now. For me, the darkest part of the movie was not the big twist or even the rap moment, because I could understand those. To me, it was the betrayal I felt at the art show, because we had one shining moral center of purity in his girlfriend the entire movie long. And then we find out that she's full of garbage too, and is just as has a white voice like everyone else, sells out just like everyone else, full of BS. And that was really painful. And especially it being a very ugly scene, simultaneously trite in art cliches. And I don't know. It's just a fascinating movie. I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah.
Well, Bryce, did you also pick Sorry to Bother You?
No, I didn't. Mostly because I figured one of you would put it.
I love the game theory that we're all doing. I wonder what movies ended up
on your list.
Awards, because we all figured the other one would do it.
No, in following with Sorry to Bother You, my third killie goes to, of course, The Great British Bake Off. What a really pleasant reality cooking show this is. I've talked about this, and I guess I will talk about this a little later on in the Killies, but it is a show with literally no stakes. I mean, it's a very popular show. Being the winner of it is you become a known thing, but there's no cash prize on The Great British Bake Off. You literally get a bouquet of flowers and a crystal like cake stand, and that's it. And so instead of becoming like the cutthroat, like, you know, I got to get this money so I can get, you know, start my restaurant or whatever, it's like everyone is helping each other. There are moments of stress, but it's a proud stress, I guess is a good way to describe it. No, it's they're doing it for themselves and to show that they can excel and not just get a cash infusion. It's a lot of day cookers or people who like don't cook for a living.
It sounds to me, if I'm reading you correctly, it sounds honest in a format that normally is so obviously dishonest, with this like, these steaks are, you know, children will die unless you cook the best cooking.
I don't even know if honesty is the right word. I think that's the right sentiment. I think it's emotional. It's emotionally honest, I guess.
Yeah.
Because if you look at like a Top Chef or something, that is there's invisible hands pushing people together and right. making decisions, where this truly does feel like people who care about showing their skills and seeing where they rank among mm-hmm. the competitors and hopefully winning. Plus, there have been personnel changes over the years, but the seasons with Paul Hollywood and Mary Berry, they are fantastic, and the two host women, they were great, and not all of those people are on some of the new seasons. And I don't know if that stuff holds up quite as well without them.
They left a network.
Right.
So, yeah.
But even still, all that stuff is really good. And apparently Netflix picked up the U.S. rights for future seasons. So that will be where a lot of that stuff is for the Great British Bake Off.
The cakes are the steaks.
So keeping with my theme of insisting on picking two items for every one slot I was allotted, I have two. One is the Polka King and... The Man Who Would Be Polka King documentary.
That's almost like a DVD extra if you watch The Polka King, right?
Yeah, well, and of course, in that Netflix fashion, the documentary came first, and the outrageous movie based on a true story came second. But don't watch them in that order. Watch the movie first and think, this is the dumbest, most outrageous comedy. There's no way this could ever, oh my God, all of this actually happened. And then when you watch the documentary and you see the characters, you're like, didn't even change the voice. Didn't even change the way they talk. Didn't even change the way they pronounced words. This is all 100% real. It's amazing.
Mm-mm-mm. Well, my next one was a surprise to me as I went through and listed all of the things that I had watched this year that I knew I liked. And I knew I had to narrow it down for the Killies. Just in the process of ordering, this one kept staying in the top and staying in the top. And the reason I'm picking Deadwood for Achille, obviously not new, is because when we watched it for Spoiler in Time, I always enjoyed and looked forward to it. And I'm not trying to say Spoiler in Time shows are a chore, but a lot of times I have to find the time, like, oh, okay, I'll be watching Firefly at this time. Oh, I can squeeze in watching Dirk Gently then. Oh, I can watch Justified here. Deadwood, I had to sometimes make myself wait because I didn't want to watch it too far ahead of when we'd actually discuss it. I would want to watch it immediately after finishing Spoiler in Time every week. It just was that enjoyable for me. And that's why I put it on the list, because I figure if I enjoyed it that much and I miss it that much, even though I just finished watching it, it deserves to be on here for me.
I'll 100% vouch for that. I definitely felt that with Deadwood in a way that I can't think of any other show that it was that strong with, where it's like, I just wanted more candy and I had to stop myself. Deadwood was definitely of that ilk.
Yeah, and other shows we've watched have felt a little bit like that, but it's the strength of that.
Yes, correct. Right. Yeah. Look, it's crack. It gets you really, really high. It's great.
Cocaine gets you high too, but crack.
but come on, crack. Are you right?
And this is a Western show, basically.
Yes, insofar as Shakespeare is European. You know, I mean, it's like it's not the setting that you fall in love with.
Yeah, it's not cowboys and Indians or anything like that.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Let's turn to your crack, Bryce.
Okay. I don't know if I fell into this show this year or last, but it is definitely Last Chance You on Netflix, the documentary series following a junior college football, and the talent that those schools are able to like recruit. Given that they are very small Midwestern towns, the first season is really fantastic because you have this really winningest, very talented, winningest is right, but it's not. I don't mean it as a superlative, but a very successful football program, and it follows them for two seasons, and then in this most recent season, it's a different school. It's a brand new coach to that school who is trying to turn around a school that has not won in decades, has gone dozens of games in a row without a win. And you get to see both kind of their different styles of coaching, and you get to follow like the characters' stories as the players, really, as they're balancing football and school. And they even present the games in each episode as very condensed stories. It's very quickly just the attitudes and the movements, and not necessarily the nitty gritty of what's going on play by play.
Yeah.
So I think that
sounds
really
like cool. Friday Night Lights with less fiction, more reality.
Yeah, basically. I think there's an HBO series that is very similar to this and closer to real time. But I don't remember the name. Hardball? That's not it. Hard Knocks, maybe? But it's very similar to that, I would say. So that's Last Chance U on Netflix.
All right. My next slot, I only did as a service to you all, because I knew none of you would do it, because you would all assume I was going to do it. It's only the greatest cinematic storytelling event in the comic book universe, Avengers Infinity War. Just note perfect, beginning to end. Watched it 3 times the week it came out. If I only wish I could see it from the perspective of somebody who doesn't know all of the Marvel Universe, so I could know outside of my subjective bubble whether or not it's just perfect. But it is.
I have to say, I agree with you. The day I came out of the theater, I find myself thinking about it less than I did the first Avengers or Guardians, mm-hmm. or even Spider-Man.
I forgot about this movie. When coming to this list, I did not clear the way for you. I forgot that I watched Avengers this year.
Okay.
But it is good. It's good.
I think the reason I have this is because it's not finished. I think in my head, I'm still on pause. I'm waiting for
Next
Endgame.
Year will be big for
Because it's
Endgame.
Not like I disagree with anything you said, and I'm super excited for Endgame. But it just, I don't think about it the way I've thought about some of the other Marvel movies.
If I'm going to make a case for it belonging as extraordinary, it would be the surprise, spoilers, that the bad guy is revealed to be the protagonist in much the last 10 minutes. And that's pretty precious, surprising, and wonderful in a world of billion-dollar blockbusters. And I thought that was a pretty cool trick for a major studio like Disney to pull off.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely like a big plate spinning act to get. I mean it's the culmination of these various phases of the cinematic.
Well, and
universe.
When you think about it in that way, you know, yeah, as a 15-year long con, that's pretty extraordinary.
It really is.
Yeah.
My next Killy goes to Alfonso Cuarón's Roma, which I think may be one of the better movies I've ever seen.
Wow!
It is difficult for me to explain, and I'll leave you to watch my fumbling attempts on last week's Cord Killers to really understand where my head's at with it. But I just feel like it's the kind of story I shouldn't tell you anything about, not because it's surprising, not because it has a twist. It doesn't.
Just because you would be doing us a service to not give us any lens to go into it, viewing it through.
Don't think you're going to get a kind of movie because it is by Cuarón, or because it's black and white, or because it's about rich versus poor, which it kind of is, because you'd be wrong. I was wrong, at least, in every preconception I had about it. And it just dazzled me.
In the broad strokes, talking this is a drama. This is
It's a real life story.
Okay,
it's not based on an actual story, but it is the kind, you know, it's a story drawn from the pages of real life in a neighborhood called Roma in Mexico City in the I think early 70s is when it's set.
Okay, very cool. Roma, that's on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
I have a pick, and it has an asterisk. It got a new season this year. It is the Netflix adaptation of Castlevania, directed by or executive produced by Adi Shankar, I believe. Season one is fantastic.
Is that the same guy that does that did the Marvel shorts? Mm-hmm. Oh my god, I didn't realize it was the same guy. That's amazing.
Yeah, I will tell you about the first episode because it doesn't directly lead into the other episodes, but it is a full episode completely justifying and humanizing Dracula, the Dracula, and giving you a very good reason why he should bring hell on Earth and destroy humanity.
That's the best. That's the best, is when you have a bad guy that you're 90% on the same page with, and it's only that last 10% or 10% that you're like, right. Eh.
And well, and that last 10% is only, hey, you're human. You should want humanity to not die.
Right.
At least I think. Maybe I'm pessimistic, but the rest of it tells a really interesting story of Trevor Belmont, who the clan that people would know from the video games of vampire hunters, and his attempts with his sidekicks to try to stop Dracula and stop the demonic war. And what season two does really well is it opens up a lot of the storytelling in revealing that if you were Dracula and you decided I'm going to wage war against humanity. It reminds you that war is a word in that sentence, and you suddenly get a very like Game of Thrones-y like politicking on the vampire side.
A reminder that you don't have unlimited resources, right. And that you have to marshal forces, you have to strike agreements, you have to have agreements to betray agreements, and so on.
Right, and so that sets up some interesting ideas for season three. I will say, and this is my asterisk, is that you probably don't need to watch the last episode in season two. It is pretty bad.
Oh, really?
It is a big stinker. It is about 40 minutes of setting up season three, and it is bad.
It must have been a really good series for you to still give it a killie when you hate the last episode
it's
that much.
Awful. I think that last episode will be useful, maybe, when there's a season three, but it's literally all like place setting for season three, and it's all like very obvious things, like obviously this character is here, this is obviously what they're gonna do. So I would say you don't need to watch that last one.
The things I've universally heard is that this is wonderful, and also not for kids.
No, not for kids. Very gratuitous use of language, gore, sexual innuendo, and I also think it's kind of an interesting take on anime. I think that the vocal performances that they get, especially from Trevor, feel more at home with like a live action show where you would have subtle visual subtlety,
right?
But because it's animation, it's cheaper than that.
You're getting frozen face,
something similar to that. But even still, it's a very impressive show, and the fight scenes, some of the fight scenes and the animation and all that is incredibly impressive. Also, that's Castlevania on Netflix.
Is it back to me yet? Yes, you said Roma, dude. One of my favorite things is going back over the year and watching what I watched and then realizing, oh my God, I forgot how much I enjoyed that. Freaking Cobra Kai was a blast.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? Let me make it a 2-for-1. Watch Karate Kid and then watch Cobra Kai.
Watch the prequel, then watch the series.
I will say, you don't need, I don't know that you, because I watched some of Cobra Kai and I.
Sure.
I figured it out.
Yeah. Well, and of course, I guess it's the, having watched the original or having any kind of a nostalgia for the original movie is the MSG to it. It's not necessary to appreciating the meal, but boy, does it ever enhance it. It really makes it something special, especially as they say in the show, how they flip the script and take what was a bad guy and make him the protagonist that you actually care about. It was a lot of fun, and I'm so thrilled that there's going to be more of it incoming.
Yeah. And I'll say that show is not super heavy, or rather like, you were talking it up, and I wanted to be able to experience at least a lot of it, and so I watched a lot of it out of order just to kind of see the big moments, and that also equally felt fine.
Yeah.
It's not a big Game of Thrones drama thing. It's a serialized sort of.
To be honest, if there hadn't been a movie planted in through a time capsule back in the early 80s, this might read as a CW show, like a Riverdale or something.
Yeah.
But given what it is and who shows up for it, it's if you're my age and remember that movie, then it's pretty great.
Yeah. There you go.
My next killie goes to New Legends of Monkey on Netflix. This is the show that I talked about where, a god is woken back up, the monkey king, I guess, and kind of doesn't remember exactly what was going on or have all of his powers. Like, he can't fly in his cloud, and he is being pursued by demons, and our main protagonist pretends to be a monk to help him out, even though she's not, and she's also hidden to be a boy. It's silly. and campy and cheesy and a remake of a series that is beloved in Australia that I've never seen, and I still enjoyed it. The external evidence that taught me how much I must have enjoyed it is every time it comes up in Netflix as a recommended, I get really excited that there are new episodes until I realize it's just, you know, saying, hey, you could watch it again if you want.
The ones you've just seen. Now, so is this you're talking about like kind of the story of the monkey god. Is this a sea drama, like an Asian drama, or?
It was originally the one that was popular in Australia was made in, well, I want to say China, but maybe it was Hong Kong or Taiwan. Mm-hmm. But it was made by outside of Australia and became popular in Australia. This one is being made with an Australian cast.
Oh, okay.
But sort of redoing that story.
Interesting. Yeah. And that's a Netflix original?
It is. I believe it's one of those things where it might be on another network in Australia, but everywhere else it's Netflix.
Co-production. Okay, very cool. I have got a pick, and it's not a Netflix pick, but it came out rather recently, and I think it was stunning for a lot of reasons, and that is the Amazon original Counterpart, the adaptation of the mm-hmm. the podcast Counterpart.
Homecoming. He wrote Counterpart. I had the same mix up in my mind. If it makes you feel any better, and I'm so glad you said podcast, because otherwise that was going to get real confusing really fast.
Especially because I am not watching Counterpart.
Oh yeah,
this season. Homecoming.
Oh, with Julia Roberts.
With Julia Roberts, directed. Directed by...
Sam Esmail. Sam Raimi's Homecoming would be amazing.
Sam Esmail.
With a bunch of zinger one-liners. He's like, you just got assimilated back into society.
this is a really fantastic mystery slash conspiratorial series about a woman who is working at a facility called Homecoming, which is meant to sort of treat veterans and soldiers returning home from foreign wars, and to assimilate them back into everyday life. And as you watch, you begin to develop questions and see things that are questionable, and over the season learn more about what happened. That's part of the mystery, is like, hey, something happened, what happened, and working your way from both ends to the thing that happens. But I also think that the end of the season sets up a very interesting plot device for a follow-up season. And my understanding is, if you are a fan of Homecoming the podcast, this script does and will continue to diverge from the story of the podcast, so you could enjoy both. It's really great, and it's beautiful. The
man, beyond words, the cinematography and the set design is just amazing. Directorial choices. In fact, Brandt was saying that he noticed that the way they do the credits was something he was aiming to do in early episodes of The Modern Rogue,
right,
where it's like everything ends, but it just sort of lingers for credits to come up. Mm-hmm. I have a question. If you're spoiler adverse and listening right now, probably for safety, just jump forward. But I suspect that there's, and again, this is not a spoiler of what happens, but a spoiler of what doesn't happen.
Okay.
I suspect that I would have enjoyed it more and faster if somebody had told me there will never be a shootout.
Right.
Don't wait for a shootout or some kind of army or whatever.
Like, yeah, there's not a big like shootout action. Like, I can think of an action sequence and it's not very actiony.
Right.
It is not that type of mystery. It is a very cerebral, rather slower paced story that sort of feeds out stuff to you. But equally, they are only 30-minute episodes.
Right.
So you kind of balance that sort of pacing. But it's not a big action sort of shoot 'em up mystery. So that's Homecoming. Brian.
Oh, back to me already?
Back to you.
Man, it's going fast. Okay. All right. Look, go ahead. Get ready to write cordkillers@gmail.com. I'm going to say it. I'm not rating this on artistic merit. I'm not rating this on quality of storytelling. I'm not going to rate this on coherence of narrative or execution or box office or anything.
It's a great sell.
I'm going to tell you flat out that I'm pretty sure, upon deep introspection and reflection, that Solo was the most fun I've had at a Star Wars movie since Jedi.
My goodness.
I can't think of anything that I had more fun at than Solo. And it could be because my expectations were very low. I'm not taking it.
They were so low.
I already used that joke once or maybe once per podcast. But it reminded me of what I really enjoyed about reading the extended universe novels in the mid 90s. There were no stakes. When there's no expectations, there's no stakes. And as a result, you just have a fun ride. And I thought for what it was a really, really fun ride. And I'm surprised to realize that that's how I feel.
You know, I saw it I'm someone who does not have a very deep understanding of Star Wars. I think if you knew nothing about Star Wars, you might really, really like Solo.
Yeah.
I think if you know nothing, because I know like the meme-y stuff and I get like, oh, the parsecs, whatever. Like, and that stuff felt heavy handed because I don't have love for it, but I do know it. So I'm very aware that it's a reference that is not precious to me.
And specifically for me, it was fun to not have any baggage. It wasn't important if it was good or not. Like we'd already been through Rogue One. We'd already, you know, and the other trilogy is the one that's quote unquote important. This one's not important. And as a result, it was a lot of fun.
Mm-mm. There you go, Solo.
Yeah, let's give him a hand.
A hand.
You really landed that recommendation.
Hey, stop Chewbacca-ing up the scenery, man. Let's go.
My next Killy goes as a Lifetime Killy Achievement Award. It did have new episodes this year, so it technically qualifies. But I want to recognize Bob's Burgers for its service to me. Mondays are enjoyable days, but they are long days. I do daily tech headlines in the morning. I do daily tech news show in the middle. I do cord killers and spoiler and time at the end. And when I'm done, I like to just sit down and relax and watch something enjoyable. And Bob's Burgers is always there when it's had a Sunday episode for me on Hulu. And I think it's 9th season now.
Yeah.
And it's just always fun. It's always exactly what I need. It makes me laugh. I love all the characters. It doesn't have a story arc of any kind that I really have to keep track of. And it's funny. I'll be honest. I believe I gave an abandonee in previous years to the other Bob-voiced vehicle.
Archer.
And Archer is what led me to Bob's Burgers. Like liking H. John Benjamin's voice made me go, I've heard a lot of good things about this Bob's Burgers. I should check it out a couple of years ago. And I'm really glad I did.
I think we will look back at Bob's Burgers in 10 years and give it the same preciousness as we do
The Office.
The best parts of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Like this is an animation classic and we are still in the good parts of that for whatever that
means. Agreed. All the scripts are really, really tight. The dynamics are tight. None of the characters tend to overstay their welcome. The kids usually get in just for the right amount of the one-liners, and they're distinct enough voices, both literally and figuratively, that is really a joy.
And like it is a deep understanding of what like family cartoon comedies have been, and knows when to like get to the next thing or to subvert those expectations, right?
Yeah.
When you can start to see them set up a premise of like, oh, we're going to be doing this, and then they'll immediately be like, oh, that's not what we're doing at all, and we don't know what we're doing next,
right?
And it that's great because that's new ideas and it feels like fresh blood in what could be very formulaic,
right?
That it's
and at this point should be stale, and to me it's not.
Yeah.
And Gene is my favorite. All right. What's your next one, Bryce?
My next pick is a movie on Netflix. And this, I did not think that I would put a romantic comedy on this list, but it is the Netflix
twist.
The Netflix movie Set It Up. I think in it, very similar to how Bob's Burgers sort of upends very standardized formulas for telling certain types of stories. I think Set It Up is a romantic comedy that is aware of what romantic comedies have looked like through, say, the 80s and 90s, and tries to find ways to not be the worst parts of those and find new parts of those, right? Like, the idea is that these two executive assistants for these two high-powered executives end up meeting each other, and they're being worked to death, and they realize, oh, they suddenly get a lot more free time if their bosses are in a relationship together, because then they go spend the night out, and then you get to have a free life, and it doesn't, there's no like unearned romances in it, which is a very common thing in any romantic story. The idea of like, oh, these two people are put together and they're of opposite genders, so they're gonna like, none of that feels forced or unearned, and it really is just a light piece that a lot of, like, I think if you have an idea, if you have a negative reaction to the word romantic comedies, I would recommend you check out Set It Up, because I think it diverges from the things that people don't like and have become stereotypical of the word romantic comedy.
Right on.
Yeah.
Which is unusual for a Netflix romantic comedy, which tend to get the reputation of
being generic,
being super formulaic.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's good. That's good.
Hey, man.
Brian.
I'm going to go with seasons 1, 2, and 3 of Preacher, which I'm convinced, Tom, you had to have looked at my list, because how could you not have put Preacher on your list otherwise?
Sure.
Tell us about Preacher.
No, it's great. No, it, look, it's the greatest television show for me. How about that?
Well, I just mean it's, like, story wise,
what is television show? And it was absolutely bubbling into my list. I did not include it because of you. I don't love it quite as much as you. And in my third season, I'm just not feeling it in my gut as much. Okay, intellectually, right. I know everything you say is right, and it is an amazing show.
Fair enough. We've talked about this before. They're masters of the perfect magic trick. They somehow continuously fool you over and over and over again by distracting you with all of their classic misdirections, like extraordinary set pieces, incredible directing, awesome scripting, characters to beat the band. That's a phrase the kids use. The only thing that I hate about it is that it's blood and gutsy enough that my wife won't watch it, and it creates a divide between the two of us that makes me ashamed. So how about that? Outside of that, it's the perfect show.
It is a brilliant show, and honestly, maybe if Eileen was into it, I would be feeling it more too. Like, it's a great point, because she also is like, nah, not my thing, you know. It's all right.
So, yeah, fair enough.
But a basic elevator pitch is what, a bad preacher?
Yeah, you know what? Doesn't even matter. Just watch it. like freaking preacher, God's a character, devil's the character, Adolf Hitler's a character.
I mean, they make you almost want to like Adolf Hitler. That's the pitch.
Yeah, no, there's an unironic point where you're probably like, you're rooting Dracula, for Hitler. But
okay.
Yeah,
where you're like catching yourself like, I really shouldn't feel this way. Should I? This
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Tom.
My next one is going to go to the Chinese television show Legend of Fuyao, which is on the Viki app from Rakuten, and is probably not the best of what is called the wuxia, the sort of the Chinese martial arts fantasy series out there. But it was my introduction into that genre. And it stars one of the best Chinese television stars, Yang Mi, as Fu Yao, a young woman in a small town. And the plot's going to sound very predictable, right? She's like, finds out that she's got skills that she didn't know and a secret past. And she meets this prince named Wuji who is sparring with her and realizes that she's got natural talent. And so she makes her way into a competition and then wins the competition and then makes her way up to the emperor's throne or the king's throne. And it's just fun. It is probably not as good as another series called Eternal Love, which is on Netflix, which also stars Yang Mi, but the CG is better because it's newer and the fight scenes are better. And it's a great introduction if you just want something different. If you're like, yeah, I want fantasy. I want kings and battles and great storylines, but I want it to be different. I want to subvert all of my expectations of what I've learned to expect. The Game of Thrones smashes with a hammer. Try Legend of Fuyao. It's going to give you an entirely different perspective on that kind of genre series.
Yeah, and that's on Viki, V-I-K-I.
The V-I-K-I. Is it V-I-K or two K's? I can't remember.
Yeah, no, I think it's like... 1K because that's how my mom spells it.
All right, I got a pick here.
Yep.
I fell in love with a Canadian show this year too, actually, but this is the one that's on my list. Called Schitt's Creek, and it is very similar concept-wise to Arrested Development. A rich family gets busted by the feds and have to go and live at the town that they bought on a whim, the town of Schitt's Creek, as a joke gift for the son, and they have to, you know, make a life in, you know, a very small rural town. But they're, you know, very kind of socialite, highfalutin folks. And what I like about it is, I think keeping with comparing it to like an Arrested Development, where every character is awful in various ways, in Schitt's Creek, every character really has their own strengths. And the show does try to show every character as like, dumb, for lack of a better word. It tries to show off the ways in which
trapped in their own bubble, or
where they need to kind of realize they need to come back down to earth. And equally, none of the characters are lost causes, and all of them have their own strengths that they really do have earned and can demonstrate.
Is it a comedy like Arrested Development?
It is. It's a single camera comedy.
So they're setting up bits and recurring gags and all that stuff.
Yeah, not as many recurring gags.
It's not as nested
as Arrested Development, yeah. Right? But it is semi serialized. But it's a comedy show, so you don't necessarily need to watch it in order that you probably would. It's really fantastic, and I don't know. I think this is mostly going to be for me, but I think David, the son character. I believe he's pansexual and he's got kind of effeminate qualities, and so for me it's fun to see a character like that get represented and not in a cheesy or jokey way or even a heavy-handed way.
And I assume not as a punchline or
right. Yeah. Oh yeah, right. So that's a very fun thing for me. I've forgotten his name now. I'm gonna look it up very quickly before I say the end of the sentence. The father is the Eugene Levy.
Oh yeah,
and the son is actually his son, Dan Levy.
His real son.
It's his
oh
real
wow.
Son,
oh, that's fantastic.
Who are both? I think they're both creators on the show. So they look alike because of that, and it's great.
What's funny is how quickly the words Eugene Levy just totally reset all of this in my mind. I have a very different picture of what it's like all of a sudden. Yeah. That's fantastic.
And Catherine O'Hara is the mom. That's right. So that's Schitt's Creek. And it's on Netflix now, but it's a Canadian show, so it might move around.
Super. Man, quick shout out to Cupcake and Dino.
General Services?
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to be honest. I haven't even finished the first season because,
really?
Well, I've been saving it weirdly. Like, because you remember I stumbled across it, you know, two characters who are brothers and they celebrate their brotherness. And I discovered it just as my brother was in a coma for a month. And, it was so powerful and important to me at that time that when Jay woke up from his coma, I
you watched it with him.
I wanted to watch the rest of it with him, and we haven't done it yet, and I've been saving it. But it's very, very funny. If you like you know, a lot of the Cartoon Network programming, the smarter side of it, it's so joyful and it's delightful. I absolutely love it.
A family friendly, and the kids could watch.
Oh yeah, no. I mean it's a kid show that just happens to be smart enough that the adults, you know, cackle at it. It's great.
I will say, as a like, it's not Baby Shark, but it,
man,
the words,
dude, it's an earworm.
Enough. Yeah,
that song.
It's going through my head right now.
General Services.
Tom,
the Marvel movie that I will give Achille to this year is Black Panther. A movie that I got lucky enough to be able to see a preview for, and then turned around and went to see it in the theater because I wanted to see it with people seeing it for the first time and enjoying it. A movie that definitely has stuck in my head. I've owned it. I haven't owned it. I bought it. I now own it. And I've watched it a couple of times at home. It's just it's a great show. It's a great story. And I think it deserves all the praise that it's gotten.
Right on.
Yeah.
What about you, Bryce?
My next pick, I'm going to give a lifetime achievement, Killy, to Futurama, which I just recently finished binge watching. I have to say, I was someone who the first three seasons that they made before they were canceled from Fox are, I believe, pitch perfect classic comedy cartoons. Incredibly well written, very well animated. A fantastic use of early 2D and 3D compositing for animation.
Yeah, it wasn't overstated. Like at the mm-hmm. time, it was really easy for people to go overboard, but they really didn't. They did the proper cell shading, and it felt, you know, felt more rotoscoped at the time.
Right, and you know, for being early 2000s, it was probably more expensive than it is to today. And so I made myself kind of go back and rewatch it because I thought the movies were okay, and I had never really found myself liking any of the new seasons that had come out. And to my surprise, I liked them more than I thought I would. I really thought I would just kind of hate them, but they do manage to hold up as a good show. It becomes a little more topical and a little more today than maybe the previous seasons had been. It kind of does that thing that any show that's long in the tooth is, where it starts to dive deep into characters who we don't need to be diving deep into,
or right.
calling back characters when...
Let's finally find out. Tell me, do they actually do like a backstory on the janitor guy?
No, you know what? Scruffy,
he's the one guy.
Don't, but there are a number
You get
of
more
characters.
Depth on Scruffy, but I don't think there's a whole episode about him, is there?
No, I don't think there's a whole episode about him. But
there's
a
love story, though.
Is that? Oh, he's like, yeah, he's got like a B plot.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, any show that goes too long stops making new characters and starts just kind of seeing what strings attached.
Because they're looking for an episode and they think, why not Zoidberg?
Or it becomes easy to do so, right? Science fiction is expensive to make because you're making lots of different types of characters, different types of bodies and things. So I understand it, but that's also where you get the most freedom. So I think if you haven't given those later seasons of Futurama a try, do it. I mean, the mimetic parts of Futurama that we think of, like Shut Up and Take All My Money, is a new season joke.
Really?
The squint fry, the not
oh,
sure
yeah,
if.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
that's a new season joke.
Wow.
It manages to hold up really well. So I think you should give Futurama a try if you kind of wrote it off.
Man, you realize so much of the stuff we've been talking about as we near the end of our total library watch of The Office with me and Penny.
Yeah.
I'm auditioning. I'm trying to figure out, oh, Bob's Burgers next? I don't know. Futurama next? Yeah.
The Good Place?
I don't know.
Cool. Oh, I will say also Futurama has a good series finale. They managed to, like, I think that is a very good episode in a show that kind of lost the plot in being science fiction or conceptual.
Tom, what about you?
Oh, it's back,
no,
to,
it's
you,
back
Brian.
To you, Brian.
Oh, wait, already?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know what? I'm going to steal yours, Tom.
Ooh.
You know what? I'm not. I'm actually going to skip this one because I see it's on your list, too. And I'm
oh,
gonna
I
say,
put it at the end so you could steal it.
Oh, ooh. Great. Well, guess what? The Good Place is wonderful. It's fantastic beyond words. It's great. We've had debates about whether we love it for the one part or we love it for the other part. Either way, we love it.
Yeah.
Like, how great that we have a show that is so universally accepted as awesome that we get to debate about which of the four legs is the most awesome of the legs of the beast. It's
and
great.
It's a primetime broadcast show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A primetime broadcast comedy.
On NBC, some would say years after NBC kind of lost its second good wave of comedy.
My health insurance comes through NBC. Let me just disclose that. My wife works for a company that's owned by NBC. But
is it in that Thursday night slot? Like, is it in what we remember as the Seinfeld slot?
It is on Thursday again, but I think they disbanded Thursday night comedy.
But spiritually speaking, the fact that it's in that hallowed territory is pretty remarkable that it could be such a smart show there.
Yeah. It's really fantastic. It's another show where you kind of want to go in without expectations.
Yeah.
But now that we are almost near the end of the third season, it's hard to, there are some things that it feels hard to not be able to talk about openly about the show.
Keep in mind also, we're also dealing with, and we've done this on several other shows, when we start off binging and we discover we love something, mm-hmm. it is a pivot to go to week, and it's a different experience. And so our expectations change and all that stuff.
I will say, I think the middle, these are long network series, seasons, and I think the middle season, the middle parts of the season start to drag, which is easy on binging and not easy on week to week.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, I will say I saw the first three or four episodes, then binged the rest of the season later and caught up on season two, and I've loved it ever since. So,
all right, Tom,
I've forged ahead. My last killie goes to the documentary Ramen Heads, about the most celebrated award-winning maker of ramen in Japan. I talked about this on the show when I watched it. I actually watched it on a plane. You can get it on Hoopla in the US, which is a streaming service tied to libraries. So with your library card, you can check it out.
Oh, yeah.
It's also available for rental if you want to drop a few bucks and just rent it like iTunes or someplace like that.
I think Netflix either recently had it or might have it.
They might have had it. It Just Watch does not show it.
I see.
As being available on Netflix right now. But it's a delightful story because it's not just about the person who's the subject, but also about his friends who are also highly respected ramen makers and what their differences are and how they make ramen. So you get educated on the different kinds of ramen without even realizing it. It's just a delicious documentary.
How would you parallel it to, or does it, how does it compare to something in a very similar vein, like Jiro Dreams of Sushi, which is.
I thought it was going to be more like that. Right. But in fact, it's more about the food and the scene as told through telling the story of the main subject. Whereas Hero Dreams of Sushi really feels like, or Jiro feels like it's about him.
Right. It's a character.
And his love, his relationship with the food.
I see. Very nice. I got a pick here. This is my pour it out pick. It is a concluded show on Netflix. It is called Love. It stars Paul Rust and Gillian Jacobs, who you might remember from Community. And it's a fantastic romantic comedy series, directed and created by Judd Apatow. It is about two people who are both pretty not great in their own ways. Gus, the male lead, is kind of he's kind of a jerk in a lot of ways, in that he's sort of uppity and judgmental. Whereas Jacobs's character is really go with the flow, kind of loosey goosey and non-committal. And over the arc of the entire series, you see them come to terms with the things that are not great about themselves. You see them, how they handle success, both professional and personal. You see them deal with interpersonal drama. And I think what you end up with is a really good love story, like a love story that feels realistic. That features real problems, and problems that are not just tackled by saying friendship will conquer all, because that's not really how you solve or deal with your own personality. You recognize who you are and you try to be a better person, and you see how these two people try to do that. And I think that's really nice. And I think it has a very good ending, a good series finale. So that is Love on Netflix.
Right on.
Ryan, do you have one more?
I do have one more, but technically this will put me at 11. But I'm gonna pretend that The Good Place was Tom's pick.
Sure, that's fair.
And I'm gonna say that. In fact, I'm gonna preemptively say that when Tom sees it, he will agree that Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is one of the greatest comic book movies. Full stop. Certainly one of the greatest comic book animated movies of all time.
Yeah.
Joy beyond words. Just laughing and crying with joy, walking out of the theater, turn around, bought another ticket. Like I kept so I was able to see it with two of the daughters. Here's the other thing. It's PG, yes. Not PG-13.
Right.
Doesn't have to dip into adult territory or whatever. It's pure PG. I was able to watch it with my 6-year-old and my 14-year-old and me at 43. loved it beyond words. And then I bought another ticket for me, my 11-year-old, and my wife, and loved it again, second time in a row. It's Tom, I cannot wait for you to call me after you've seen this. It's so great.
Awesome. I know that I'm going to pretend
that I didn't just speak for you on your opinion for a movie.
Sorry to bother you. Was Brian's pick actually?
Oh, okay.
I've got one more slot here, and yeah. I thought, okay, of the ones that I deleted and did not include on my list, what's the one I can remember? This is my random Killy award, and the one that popped to mind was Crazy Rich Asians. It was thoroughly delightful, exceeded my expectations, even though everybody had told me it was hilarious and wonderful. And I love every actor in it. Who's the rapper who plays the friend?
Aquafina.
I didn't know her before this movie, and now she's one of my favorites ever. So that one gets my last Killy.
Fantastic. My last pick is, I think, a controversial pick, a pick that is not exactly what it seems, partially what I would chop up or put at the plate of Netflix's marketing department, which I think has a very hit or miss trailer production pipeline. But it is the special Hannah Gadsby Nanette, which on its surface feels like and is sold as a comedy special. But it is also, I don't even know the word for it. It is a one woman show, that talks about comedy, but also the hardships that marginalized people go through, especially in comedy, as they, weaponize their own experiences, and the ways that they both lie to themselves and audiences, for the sake of making jokes and in even making their own jokes about themselves, and sort of the price of empowerment. It is heavy. It's depressing. It's got some good laughs. It is controversial. But I also think that I walked away from it feeling like I understood her and sort of the plight of marginalized comedians, much better, and as a queer man myself, I feel like I also had a better understanding of the other people in my community.
Cool.
So I think it's really worth a try, with the understanding that it is not a comedy. It is not a comedy stand-up special. It is a one-woman show. And so that does it for our picks. But now we have our last segment here.
Normally. This is easier. This is the part where we take something that we've been following for a while and we announce what we want to give up. And now normally we actually do give it up where we're just done with it. But I'm looking at the list and I'm seeing a lot of question marks here. Tom seems the most assured. You want to go first?
Yeah, I took an evidence-based approach and I looked at what I had actually stopped watching. And not like, oh, I stopped watching, but I'll pick it back up. But what one that I continually look at on my list of things to watch in TV time and don't even think, oh, I should probably watch that. And I don't want to admit it, but Venture Brothers this season is that show.
Is it the fatigue of it being a seventh season and over a decade adventure and you're like adventure and you're just sort of out of steam, or is it this particular season wasn't doing
it
for
you? I was very excited for it to come back because it had been gone for a while. I watched the first few episodes of the season every week as they came out, and then I didn't. Wow. Then I was 2 weeks and I watched one, and then it was 3 weeks and I watched one, and then I haven't watched the last five.
So,
I can't put my finger on one thing. It just stopped being compelling. And I can't say that they did anything wrong, but they didn't do anything right.
It was 2 years between this season and the previous season, which had 3 years between those previous seasons, which were 3 years between those previous seasons. So, like, you have to be hanging on for the, because all of these Adult Swim shows have very long production times. Do you think that is a part of it? Like, you have outgrown it, or
maybe? Yeah, it's hard to say. I I like that they tried something new, but maybe it was too new, or maybe it was new location but same jokes. You know, it doesn't have that compelling surprise to it for me.
I mean, if it makes you feel better, I haven't even watched the last few years enough to get caught up to know whether or not the last season is not as good or not.
Yeah, no, and I know a lot of my friends who used to watch it who fell away a lot longer ago. But yeah, this is the year it happened to me.
All right, look, if we're just going to eat the shock and horror of the audience, then I'll go ahead and take it right now.
Sure.
And understand, this is not a full-on abandonee. I'm not done, capital
yeah,
D,
this is an interesting
D-O-N-E.
This is an asterisked abandoning.
This is me looking at everything that I watched this last year and asking myself honestly, what am I least excited about going back to? Mm-hmm. And if I was given the homework of rewatching anything I've watched this year, I think last place would be Better Call Saul, because every time as I went through the year and I was like, and I watched Better Call Saul and I was like, what happened that episode? I was like, I don't know, some crap, nothing advanced, some crap, nothing advanced, some crap, nothing advanced, some crap, nothing advanced. Nothing happened this season. I can't think of a single thing that advanced any of the plot lines in this season.
It is it's transitional in the way that Jimmy's character is transitioning through the thing that happens in the beginning of the season, but it is that becomes a very subtle sort of mental change, not necessarily outward facing.
And it's I think last year I gave it to Westworld, and of course I'm going to still watch Westworld when it comes back. But now Better Call Saul has entered that category of feels like homework, like Westworld, and I'd hate to admit that. And
actually, last year your abandee was American Gods.
That was a hard abandee. That was a 3 episodes in, and I was like, I think I have homework to do. but in the spirit of our middling excitement for Westworld, Better Call Saul is feeling much more tedious than I would like it to.
Okay, you know, I had a very similar thing with my pick in that. I at least started watching the new season of it this year and fell off. And I think if this show wasn't really good for a couple of seasons ago, this would have been a very quiet me stopping watching it. But I think this year I had to have I very actively said, I don't think I'm going to watch South Park anymore.
Wait, now, is this a divergence of – because South Park has been to a certain degree ideological. It's been – you know, they've been – there's South Park as satire. There's South Park as, you know, gross out humor. There's South Park as a sitcom.
I mean, it's true that, like, in the past decade, South Park has become more ideological and topical based rather than kind of conceptual.
Right.
And I don't have – that sort of prejudice against it. I have always understood South Park as more anti-extremism than any one party or idea. But I look at a few seasons ago when they started to do the idea of like serializing the season, having running jokes, having running arcs, and having that stuff work out really, really well. And then last year or the year previous when kind of I don't think they expected Donald Trump to win.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. They had the whole season clearly setting up something that they couldn't pay off.
I think they couldn't pay off. And between that and then this year, which I think they're just trying. This is going to sound very like a concerned citizen. I think they're trying to be interesting by being provocative. Like they did, I know at least on one or two of the episodes I saw, the end credits had a watermark with hashtag cancel South Park on it. And that feels very much like, I don't think that that's genuine, but I think that you're trying to use me. And
interesting.
That's not a good way that I like to be engaged. And also, I just don't think it's as well written as it used to be.
And here's the funny part is whether or not this is a Matt and Trey thing. You know, for all we know, that hashtag is, you know, some newly hired intern has an idea and got whatever. But whether it is or it isn't, as a product, it certainly reads as that.
Yeah.
To you. And that's what really matters.
And I think one thing, I remember reading an interview with them recently, because they, you know, they tend to still do the majority of they tend to lead a lot of the writing for that show. They do a lot of the voicing and, you know, something that they mentioned that hearing them say it made me realize is that they tend to write a lot more stories about the Randy, the father, than the kids, because they are 40 something year old men with kids. And so they have shifted.
Hashtag irrelevant.
Well, no, but no,
sorry. I'm speaking on behalf of the other 40 year old men.
But I think there's a tonal shift that goes along with that change in perspective, because it's not like his character was suddenly a blank slate either.
Right.
And so I think it's just kind of lost the thread for me, which is unfortunate. I grew up with South Park. I think that a lot of South Park is just note perfect, but I think where it's at now, I don't think you can convince me to watch the rest of the season or next season.
Interesting. Man, what a weird year for our Abandies. Normally it's so cut and dried.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny that Bryce's Abandy parallels my Abandy from 1998.
Oh, jeez. You gave up that long ago? You missed out on some good stuff.
There was some good stuff. No, but
no, it's a crazy year, and more ways than one. And I feel like this is the year that our lists were the most different than they've ever been.
Yeah.
Even though we still had two that overlap.
And to be clear to anybody who is upset about our Abandies, Gambling Man points, like, none of them are bad. Like, normally we have an adverse, like, yeah, I'm done. But in fact, we invented the category because there's this adverse, like, you know, middle finger that we want to give to something.
Yeah.
But I don't think any of us felt that very strongly for any of our Abandies.
It was difficult for me to
not
pick
at all.
This year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a testament to the variety of shows you have to choose from, that we have to abandon shows we still kind of like.
Did you? I know I felt like that. I felt this because most of my stuff I either watched on Netflix or was a Netflix exclusive. But like the amount of streaming exclusive content on my list, I mean, almost overtook it. How do you guys feel about that? Because I know you guys went a little more movies and maybe a little more varied on that.
But I mean, I would say part of the reason that I did so many movies is because I think movies is the last traditional mainstream way I consume any of that stuff. I think everything else is streaming or you know, originals or YouTube videos or et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you know, there are things we didn't mention just because they're boring. It's like, I still love Red Letter Media's Half of the Bag and so on and so on.
There are only two movies on my list that I saw in the theater.
Yeah.
Oh, wild.
The other movies I saw either on demand or streaming.
But and Brian only. Meanwhile, you saw a lot of movies in the theater because you went and saw a bunch of screeners, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wild.
Yeah. I mean, as far as TV shows go, Brian, you only had one that was on cable TV and you still streamed it. That was Preacher.
Yep.
Everything else was streaming based.
Yeah. Unless you count Good Place. Yeah.
And The Good Place, yeah. I guess. True. It's interesting. I mean, it was last year that Netflix was saying that they were going to flood the market, and I know
and that
I
they did.
They did it
as well, right. As they flooded your cell phone with notifications, and then flooded your Twitter feed with mockery.
Oh my god! Every time I would see the notification that someone liked it, because their comment takes up like 8 lines.
Yeah,
it would fill up my notification feed because it was so large. Oh my goodness.
Hey, thank you guys so very much for joining us for the Killies. It's been a long one this year. It's been a robust because we had, you know, more divergent things we're excited about.
We actually hit an hour this year.
Yeah.
I think normally we end up rushing because this is a 10-hour day of podcasting. But ironically, our tech difficulties kind of allowed us to power through this.
Worked out good.
Yeah, worked out very well.
The Killies are brought to you by Cord Killers at patreon.com/cordkillers. Look for a new Cord Killers after the 1st of January.
Hey, thank you guys so very much for joining us. If you want to write us with anything that has you fired up, either pro or con, hit us up at cordkillers@gmail.com.
That was all.
That was all. It's a hell of a sign off. That's Walter Cronkite used to say that, right? He used to grab his ear, shake, and then salute and say, "That was all."
He would grab his ear and shake.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a Carol Burnett.
Oh no,
thing.
I know.
Yeah, okay,
I know.